It started life as an English play by J.B. Priestley, but was first performed in the Soviet Union in 1946. It has since become a theatre classic, and in 1954 it was committed to film. And Inspector Calls is the classic movie choice of Daryl Jones, who's with me in studio now. Daryl, and Inspector Calls, this J.B. Priestley play stroke film, there's a family called the Burles, is that their name?
The Burlings, yes.
The Burlings, sorry, at the centre of it. Mm. Who are they?
Okay, well, it's important to know that we're in the year 1912, and the Burlings are a prosperous, provincial, northern, industrial family. The father, Mr. Burling, is a wealthy factory owner. And so where we are at the beginning of the film is on a celebratory evening for the family. Their daughter, Sheila, is about to marry into the local aristocracy. She's about to marry young Gerald Croft. And so the family is going to rise in society. And Arthur himself is also confident, but he's confident of two things. He's confident that there will never be a war with Germany and that he's about to get a knighthood.
And he's predicting this in 1912.
In 1912.
We know he's definitely going to be wrong on one of those matters. That's for sure. But here he is early on in the film with the Gerald character, who is going to be his son-in-law if things go according to plan. And he has some concerns around his own political life, so he's sharing those with Gerald.
There's a fair chance of my getting into the next honours list.
Oh, I say, congratulations.
Oh, thanks, but it's a bit too early for that yet, so don't say anything. But I've had a hint or two.
I gather there's a very good chance of a knighthood. So long as we all behave ourselves and don't get into the police courts.
What's that about police courts?
Oh, nothing, just a little joke.
Doesn't seem very funny to me.
I was just telling Gerald that now that he and Sheila are engaged, we must all behave ourselves. No scandals, no monkey business.
You seem a nice, well-behaved family to me.
Well, we think we are.
I think that piece of music perhaps makes us realise that something's going to happen as well. Just I said that we had the father and son-in-law there, but also coming into the clip is the son of the family.
That's right.
Who's a problematic son, and he's drunk for most of the early part of the movie. The actors that are involved, before we get to the main actor, the actors that we heard there, how well known are they, or were they at the time?
Not very well known, and I suspect probably deliberately. Most of them are in fact stage actors, and in some cases actors who'd been involved in the play itself. I mean, I guess apart from the lead role, the only person who had a notable career is Brian Forbes, who plays Eric, the drunken younger son, who went on to be a minor stalwart of the British film industry in the 50s and 60s and became a film director as well.
The main character, however, is the one that everybody will think of when they think of this film, and it's an inspector. It's the inspector who calls Inspector Poole, played by
the great Alistair Sim.
And here is his first entrance.
Yes?
My name's Poole. Inspector Poole.
What's the meaning of this? There's a front door, you know.
I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Burling. I thought I'd find you here.
Very bright of you, I'm sure. People usually are in the dining room at dinner time. Oh, well, now you're here. Where's the warrant?
Oh, there's no warrant, Mr. Burling.
Well, what is it, then?
I'd like some information, if you don't mind.
Well, you better sit down.
About 2 hours ago, a young woman died in the infirmary. She'd been removed there this afternoon after taking poison. It's believed some strong disinfectant.
How horrible.
Yes. Yes, it wasn't a pleasant sight.
Suicide?
Well, that, of course, we don't know yet, for certain.
Albert Sims as Inspector Poole in An Inspector Calls. Daryl, where was Albert Sims at?
Alistair Sim, at
this point in his career?
Well, he would have been about 54 years old by this point. So he was pretty well established. In fact, I think he was very well established by this point as a British film actor. He'd been a successful stage actor before that, but started his career as an academic. He was a lecturer in drama at Edinburgh University, and he became rector of Edinburgh University. He was rector of Edinburgh University at this time. But I think he's one of those actors who, I mean, really, he has a face for middle age. He really didn't come into his own as an actor or a screen persona until his late 40s.
Didn't he? Who was it? It was Harold Macmillan that he beat in an election
in
to become that rector.
In a landslide election to become rector of Edinburgh University, that's right.
Now, his life, his behaviour on screen, I mean, the acting is absolutely superb to watch, but he was difficult to work with.
I think he was a spiky, cantankerous man, and I think, you know, kind of played up to that spiky, cantankerous persona. He famously never refused to sign autographs and was quite reclusive and, you know, turned down a knighthood, in fact, because he didn't want anything to do with that. He thought it might give him a public profile of the kind that he did not want. So, yeah, he's an intense, solitary and difficult individual.
Which is perfect casting for Inspector Pooh.
I think very much so. And I think tended to play, I mean, his other most famous role, I suppose, is as Ebenezer Scrooge, which is in some ways quite a similar role. You know, he manages to balance being kind of frightening and sympathetic at the same time, being kind of ghoulish and angelic at the same time.
Now, an Inspector Calls is part of a series of plays. Is it just J.B. Priestley who wrote these?
It is, yes.
Yeah, they're called time plays.
That they were, or that's what they've become known as, yeah. Which he wrote across the 1930s and 40s. And Inspector Calls is the last and best known of them. In 1927, an Irish aeronautical engineer called J.W. Dunn, who was born and brought up in County Kildare, wrote a book called An Experiment with Time, which was a very influential book, and it dealt in ideas of precognition, the idea that we have been here before or we have dreamt the future. And he came to the conclusion that linear time as we experience it is in fact an illusion. It's an illusion of our senses, and that all time exists simultaneously. And so Priestley wrote a number of plays. He wrote Dangerous Corner, I Have Been Here Before, Time in the Conways, and An Inspector Calls, on this theme of recurrence and cyclical time.
And that plays into the plot as it transpires towards the end.
Oh, very much so, yes.
This film is very tight. It's an hour and 17 minutes long. The fact that it came from a play, was it really pared back, or was the play itself already very pared back?
The play itself is a short and tight piece. If anything, it's actually slightly expanded from the play, because what we have in the film are a series of flashbacks. I suppose about a third of the film takes place in flashbacks, where we gradually piece together the plot, and the plot being that the entire family, plus Gerald, the aristocratic fiancé, are all in their various different ways complicit in the death of a young girl, Eva, who worked to begin with in Mr. Burling's factory.
And in fact, the inspector is very clever in the way that he slowly unfolds the information. He reels each one of them in as he's going along.
He does, and there's a sense which some of the characters, especially the younger generation, recognise quite or reasonably early on, that the inspector, first of all, knows much more than he's letting on, and that he's giving the family enough rope to hang themselves, which they comprehensively do.
The mother is quite the character in this particular situation.
Yes.
Explain the charitable foundation that she works for and the sort of things that they do.
Well, it's a kind of women's institute is what it is. A collection of what we assume to be the wives of the wealthy bourgeoisie of the town gather together a charitable commission in which they give money to worthy causes, and young Eva appeals in desperate circumstances.
And Eva Smith is the young woman, played by Jane Wenham, and the mother, Sybil Burling, is played by Olga Lindo.
May we now proceed, Mrs. Levson?
Oh, do. Do. Now, this man, why must you lie about him?
I didn't want to bring him into it.
Why not?
He didn't mean any harm. He was just silly and wild. Sometimes he drank too much.
Why don't you make him marry you? In my opinion, he should be compelled to marry you.
It isn't that he won't marry me. We just couldn't. We're not of the same class.
This is ridiculous. A girl in your position can't afford these fine airs and scruples. You don't mind coming begging for charity. Why not go to this drunken young idler, whoever he is? Make him support you.
He did. He gave me money.
And now he won't give you any more.
He would, but I can't take it.
And so, this young ne'er-do-well, because of your highfalutin notions, is to escape the consequences of his actions and shift his responsibility onto a charitable organization such as this. I think the members of this committee will agree with me that it would be monstrous were I to recommend the expenditure of our funds in such a way. In my opinion, he should be publicly exposed.
Pride cometh before a fall.
Indeed it does. Yes, what she doesn't realise is that her drunken son, Eric, is the father.
Who is the director in this case, and to what extent is he, and Priestley as well, lampooning that upper class and that aristocratic class?
Well, the director is Guy Hamilton, who's probably best known for making some of the greatest James Bond movies of the 60s and 70s. He made Goldfinger, he made Diamonds Are Forever, Live and Let Die, and The Man with the Golden Gun. But I think insofar as Priestley is concerned, I mean, lampooning is, if anything, a mild word. Priestley was many things, but one of the things he was a kind of socialist public intellectual, hence the first performance of the play in the Soviet Union in Moscow. And it's a play about class. It's a play, if anything, it's actually a play about class war and the way in which the wealthy and powerful are complicit in the suffering of the poor.
Yeah, because there is another scene earlier on where the women working in Burning's factory come looking for a wage.
Yes.
Right, he's having none of it.
He's having none of it, and he sacks young Eva, and this is the beginning of her troubles, and everybody sitting around the table at the beginning contributes towards her death.
The play was the film is set in 1912, just before the First World War, and then it was actually performed just post World War II. So how do those two particular periods affect what we see and hear?
I think they affect it very powerfully. You know, it's a film that's written coming out of the Depression and the Second World War. So it's a film with much to say about class, poverty and unemployment. But it's also a film with much to say about the follies of the older generation. I keep being reminded of a quote from George Orwell, writing at the same time, in which he said, "A generation of the unteachable are hanging around us like a necklace of corpses." And I think that's the thing that's going on here. The younger generation are capable of redemption. They understand what they've done. The older generation, the generation, that is to say, who are just over the horizon of time, about to send the younger generation off to slaughter, are shown to be possibly beyond redemption.
Well, here's one of the scenes towards the end of the piece. And at this point, they think that Inspector Poole is not an inspector at all. And therefore, they think that it's all been set up. The younger generation are having none of that, however.
No girl has died there today. They haven't had a suicide in months.
What a relief. Gerald, my boy, pour us out some drinks at once. To think that it's all over.
Is it?
Well, isn't it? We've just been had, that's all.
So nothing's really happened. Just because it didn't end tragically, there's nothing to be sorry for. Nothing to learn. We can all go on behaving just as we did.
Well, why shouldn't we?
We all began to learn something. But now you're ready to go on the same old way.
Oh, and you're not, eh?
No. Because I remember what he said and how he made me feel. It frightens me, the way you talk.
It frightens me, too. Just look at them. The famous younger generation who know it all. And they can't even take a joke.
I tell you, whoever that inspector is, so long as I live, I shall never forget him.
Arthur Young, Olga Lindo and Eileen Moore and Brian Forbes from the 1954 film An Inspector Calls. Daryl, just before we finish up, the death of Mickey Rooney announces a very long career. What do you think his contribution was to cinema?
His contribution is quite simply longevity. You know, he is probably the last of the great Golden Age Hollywood stars, and almost certainly the last star whose career began in the silent era.
And it's that longevity is what you think he'll be remembered most for.
Oh, I think yes.